change the world together. Welcome to the Snapcast, the podcast for all nonprofit professionals, bringing you interviews and amazing ideas for nonprofit leaders.
Hello, thank you for joining us. This is the Nonprofit Snapcast, recording in Strongbox West. Here at the table with me, I have my friend.
This is Monica LaBelle.
Monica, what do you do?
I'm a social scientist with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and I work in program evaluation.
Fantastic. And our guest for the day is Andrew Leonard. Andrew Leonard is the Vice President of Programs for the Lyme Foundation. Andrew, are you there?
Yes, thank you for having me today.
Excellent. What do you do for the Lyme Foundation as Vice President of Programs?
Well, that's a great question. Being that we are a very small foundation and relatively new, we were founded in 2015. My role is all-encompassing, as I'm sure is true for many, many people in the nonprofit sector. We wear many hats. So in addition to program coordination, I help out with our curriculum development. I help out with our grant writing, our fundraising from many different perspectives, corporate development, private donations, things of that nature. I do our AV stuff. I do our tech stuff. I do a lot of our photography. I help with our website. I kind of do a little bit of everything.
I'm laughing because I'm too familiar with the notion that people in the nonprofit sector tend to end up wearing tons of hats anyway. I have to ask, how'd you get into it?
So I was working at our local United Way, which is the United Way of the Wine Country here in Santa Rosa, California. And a colleague of mine was friends with the woman who founded the Lyme Foundation. Her name is Letitia Hanke. And she is one of the only female African-American roofers in the entire U.S. And in 2015, she decided to start the Lyme Foundation with this goal of helping more young people get into the trades, and that among other reasons. And when she was forming her board of directors, after about a year or so, she invited me onto her board. And in 2016, I joined the board and was on the board for, I guess, about 3 years before she called me one day and said, I'd like to hire you as our program person.
Wow.
Interesting.
So what does, I mean, again, you know, I know you wear tons of different hats, but in terms of the part of the job that relates directly to programming, what is your immediate charge?
So I oversee the implementation and day-to-day activities of three main programs. We have a program called the Turner Arts Initiative. That's one program. That's sort of our most budding program that needs the most development right now. This is a program to help young people get into the arts, get scholarships for arts programs at our junior college and other dance academies, for example. Another program we have is called the Senior Activities Program, which is a program for senior citizens. It's a free 6-week long nutrition program that has a component of stretching and yoga and mindfulness attached to it as well.
I need some of that, actually.
Sorry?
I said, I need some of that, actually.
We all do. And you know what? I sit in on these sessions and I get to sit there and sort of enjoy the yoga and the mindfulness portion of it. And think, you know, this really does benefit everyone. It's not just seniors, but,
yes.
You know, it's really helpful for people that don't get out. They may not have a lot of, you know, social connections if they're living in a senior living facility, for example. You know, really helpful for that population. And then our last program, which is our biggest program by size and by budget, is called our Next Gen Trades Academy, which is a vocational program for youth ages 16 to 24. And like I said, the whole idea of this program is to get more and more young people into the trades. There's a big gap right now of 30-somethings to 40-somethings that we don't have in the trades. So all we have are the newcomers and the people who are nearing retirement. And so we're trying to front load the issue right now and get more people into the trade so that we don't have a huge deficit, a bigger deficit than we already have in the workforce. So my role is to oversee what we're doing with the implementation, whether it's going to the classes and overseeing our instructor, helping our instructor develop the curriculum, helping out with things like the online learning platform that we use, getting that set up and, you know, sort of initialized for our students, you know, anything and everything related to the day-to-day program implementation, I'm usually right there, right next to our instructors.
You mentioned that that's your program. How are you funded?
We are funded largely through grants. We have corporate grants. We have some governmental grants. But most of our funding at this point is private grants.
So not too much of an individual donor component?
You know, that's something that we're working on. It's in our community right now. I think in Sonoma County, we have the highest per capita rate of nonprofits in the country. So as much as I hate to say that there's competition for dollars, there is competition for dollars, sure. And every single nonprofit is vying for those same dollars right now. And, you know, getting that individual donor base can be so hard because it's all about that relationship building and getting out there in the community.
You talked about having a huge grants agenda. You must have specific staff to help with actually the actual writing of the grants, correct?
Yeah, I do a fair amount of grant writing. We do have other grant writing staff as well, a mm-hmm. small team of us, and we sort of split those responsibilities. You know, it's sort of the, you know, there's a research phase for finding what grants might apply to us. There's the application phase. Then there's the accounting phase of it, of course. So there is someone who does each of those things.
Which leads, I was going to take that and lead into the next section. When you responded to our original request for guests, you said you could talk about measuring outcomes and as well as some programmatic challenges. But I imagine, like with the grants agenda that you guys have, measuring outcomes must be a pretty big piece of what you do.
Certainly, because in order to get grants, it's sort of like a chicken versus egg thing. You can't get the grants without the outcomes, but you can't get the outcomes without the grants. So you have to start somewhere, right? And a lot of people really say, well, you need the numbers. You really need the numbers to get grants. Well, you have to back up for a minute. You have to tell the stories as well. And one of the things I've found in about 7 years of program management is that there's a real human component to the grant giving process. And it sounds like there's often this black box. We don't always know what the grant makers are thinking. But at the same time, you know, when you provide those numbers, you have to give them stories as well. And so for us, this idea of telling a story, be it visually or someone's own testimonials, is so important to getting those grants.
I know that sometimes grant maker require that outcome be done. How do you do that?
That's a great question. And the way that we do that is we have external contractors who work with us for the evaluation of our programs. In one case, for one of our programs, it's the program instructor who gives out surveys which are anonymized at the beginning and then coded for the post surveys. And she puts together a report in pretty good detail about what the outcomes were like. And then in another case, we have an external evaluator come in and survey our students at the beginning of the class, the first day, and then on the last day of the class, which is 10 weeks in, and to get the pre and post. It's a self-reported attitude survey. So as you said, you know, a lot of people do contract out for this, and I think that adds a layer of objectivity to it.
So for the most part, it sounds like you're looking at knowledge change and attitude change. Do you do any sort of investigating into the application of that knowledge once they've left your program and on to applying their trade skills?
Sure. So one of our key components of our trades program is actually the job placement process. And, you know, what we do is at the end, we help students attend a trades fair that we put on, a job fair, where they get to wear their newly embroidered shirts and their hard hats, and they get to interview with 40-some-odd contractors who we have close relationships with. And sometimes those contractors offer them jobs right on the spot. So one of the metrics that we measure is job placement.
Do you find that the world of grant making has changed much in the last 10 years or so? And the reason I ask that is, you know, we've talked about data versus story. And obviously most grant makers want a good balance of each. But I have often wondered if data is not becoming more important than story for some folks.
You know, it really depends who you talk to. I've found that for scientifically based organizations that have a lot of engineers, those types of groups tend to rely a lot more heavily on the numbers because that's how they operate in general. They're numbers people, they're engineers. So that's just how they function. That's what resonates with them. When you look at other companies, you know, particularly private foundations, you know, it's more of a mix between the numbers and the storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
And I think personally, I think that you can't have one without the other because you need to put some context next to those numbers. And, you know, as much as we'd all like to go out and be able to do randomized control trials, you know, sometimes you just don't have the numbers for it. And sometimes it's not going to be ethical to do that either.
We're both sitting here thinking, okay, how to segue to the next. What are your programmatic challenges? Let's talk about that.
Programmatic challenges. I could either give you an explanation that would take days and days and days, or I could skip the topic altogether. That's a really tough one.
And maybe we tie it, maybe the way to get at it is to tie it to outcomes measurement, because of course what a funder cares about, what any grant maker cares about, is did you get the outcomes that you intended to get? Because did you make good on our investment? Were you good stewards of our money? But you can't talk about outcomes without talking about process, right? And so when you're looking for those outcomes metrics, you want to know how you got there so that you can troubleshoot if you didn't get there.
Absolutely. I think one of the biggest challenges for any nonprofit, especially newer ones, is coming up with all of that supporting literature, like your program manual and your implementation guidelines, because for so many nonprofits, you know, especially small ones, you're sort of just, you're building the ship as you fly it. And it's so hard to take a step back and really look at, okay, here's, we're going to put together a program manual that outlines exactly what we're doing and the policies that we follow. Well, you know, what if you don't have all the policies in place yet because you're still building them? That's one really big challenge. Another really big challenge for the grant making process, especially, is that a lot of nonprofits get tied up in not really being able to convey the difference between an output and an outcome. And this is such a stickler for a lot of grant makers, because they want to know what your outcomes are, but oftentimes people are just giving them output. So when we say that we had, you know, 99 students in our trades program this year, that's an output. That's the number of students that got the program. The outcome is how many of them got hired, how many of them stayed in their jobs, things like that. And so to be able to articulate that difference well is something that I've found that it really takes a more experienced grant writer and an experienced team to convey well.
Right. And that's the data part. And then the story part is, would they have achieved that outcome without your program?
Right. And that's one of those things that, like I said, a randomized control trial is the only way to tell. And we're not going to deny students access to a program just that they can be part of our study. So one of those things that you have to really take a step back and look at what you're trying to get out of the study and your numbers, and ask, can I do this ethically, and what is the benefit to having such strong numbers? Because oftentimes, you know, we have to not let perfect be the enemy of good, as my old boss used to say.
Not let perfect be the enemy of good. Yes, absolutely. You can tell that we're going to do some editing here.
Yes. And that's fine.
So let's go back to the very beginning again. Your own history is in education, and if we can do a second episode, I want to ask you about your experiences on the Board of Education in Sonoma County. But what led you? I mean, is this a particular passion of yours? Was it just circumstance that brought you here? Have you always been passionate about educational causes?
You know, I have been for a long time. I was really superbly lucky to have some fantastic educators in the public school system when I was growing up. And to not exactly follow in their footsteps, but to try and take their philosophies about education and see if I could help find that be applied to other parts of education and other places, that to me was sort of the allure. And, you know, I never really had plans to become a teacher per se, or to go into education as an educator, but you know, I feel like maybe in a next life I would do it. You know, I spent 2 years teaching abroad in Korea and in France, and it was a teaching experience, but it's nothing like the teaching experience that you'd have in the U.S. as a certificated teacher. And so I try to preface that when I talk to people about my experience as a teacher, as an educator, that they're very different things. And so, you know, my passion for it comes from seeing the results and seeing people learn. Even if I'm not in the classroom, you know, every single day these days, that's what keeps me going, is seeing the impact of what we're doing. And, of course, that's what drives a lot of our dollars that come in as well through our grant making. And so I'd like to think that my own passion for seeing those outcomes is, A, going to help those outcomes be realized, and, B, help us get funding by communicating those outcomes well.
Okay, great. I think that's all we have time for this episode. So let's definitely continue this conversation with the next episode. And and we'll thank our guests for joining us. As always, you could find us any number of ways. You can find us on the nonprofitsnapshot.org website. And I believe you can find us on the Wellspring Nonprofit Resource website as well. Thank you, as always, for joining us. And we will catch you next time.
This has been The Snapcast. Thank you for joining us.